2 miles should have taken 2 minutes, but the wounded car took more than four. Reacher used the third flare in the southwestern corner, the bottom left from the pilot's point of view. He got back in the car, backed up, turned the wheel, headed out. The car started juddering uncontrollably. It started losing all its power. The temperature needle jammed hard against its end stop. Steam and black smoke started coming out from under the hood, thick clouds of it. 100 yards to go, that was all. One more corner. The car made 50 yards and died. It just ground to a stop and stayed there, refusing to go on, hissing and inert, right in the middle of the runway's southern edge. The transmission was gone, or the oil pressure, or the water, or something, or everything. Reacher got out and ran the rest of the way. He spiked the last flare and stood back. The crimson glow in the four distant corners was way brighter than anything else around it, and it came back off the shaped berms of plowed snow twice as bright, adequate from the Boeing's flight deck. Looking forward and down from an oblique angle, there would be no doubt about the shape and location of the landing strip. The car was dark and dead right across the middle of the near end, but it was no worse than an airport fence. 2 minutes and change. Job done. Except that Reacher was stuck, 2 whole miles from where he needed to be, and it was a cold night for walking. Except that he was pretty sure he wouldn't need to be walking. He was pretty sure he could get a ride, if he wanted one, before too long. Maybe even before he froze. Which was good. Except that given the state of his current information, it was highly likely his ride would get him to the stone building a little after Plato got there. Which was not good. Not good at all. And not even remotely what he had intended. Plans go to hell as soon as the first shot is fired. He hustled back through the frigid air to the dead car, and he leaned on its flank and watched the night sky in the south, and waited. A minute later, Reacher saw lights above the horizon, like stars that weren't stars. Tiny electric pinpricks that hung and twinkled and grew and danced a little, and down, side to side. Spotlights in an airplane's landing gear, for sure, approaching head-on, maybe 10 miles out. Then he saw lights below the horizon, too. Yellower, weaker, pooled on the ground, less stable, bouncing, moving much slower. Headlights. A road vehicle. 2 of them, in fact. 1 behind the other on the wandering, snowbound two-lane, approaching head-on, crawling along, doing maybe 30, maybe 5 miles out. His ride. Close, but not close enough. He leaned back in the cold and waited and watched. The Boeing got there first. It started out small and silent, and then it got bigger and noisier. It came in low and flat, all broad, supportive wings and swirling heat shimmer and deafening jet whine and stabbing beams of light. Its nose was up and its undercarriage was down, the trailing wheels hanging lower than the leading wheels like talons on a giant bird of prey ready to swoop in and seize the crippled car like an eagle takes a lamb. Reacher ducked and the plane passed right over his head, huge and almost close enough to touch, and the roiled air and shattering noise that trailed behind it threatened to knock him flat. He straightened again and turned and watched over the roof of the car as the plane skimmed and hung and deliberated and floated 100 yards, 2, 3, and then it put down decisively with a loud yelp of rubber and a puff of black smoke, and then its nose tipped down, and it ran fast and flat and true before the reverse thrusters cut in and slowed it in a bellowing scream. Reacher turned back and faced south. The road vehicles were still heading his way. They were moving slowly and carefully along the moonlit two-lane, cautious because of the curves and the ice and the bad surface, but relentless, a miniature convoy with a destination in mind. Their headlight beams swung left, swung right, bounced up, dipped down. The first vehicle was a strange open-frame truck with a big coil of heavy, flexible pipe wrapped over a drum immediately behind the cab, and then a pump built into a square steel frame, and then a second coil of pipe on a second drum. The vehicle right behind it was the same general size and type, but behind the cab it had a big white tank and a cherry picker bucket and a long articulated boom arm folded up and tied down for travel. The first truck was painted in the colors of the Shell Oil Company. It had the word Isuzu across its grill. The statewide Bolo bulletin, an Isuzu N-series pump and a de-icing truck stolen by two absconded employees from a commercial airfield east of Rapid City. Stolen on Plato's orders, presumably, so that his 737 could be refueled from the underground tank and then flown away safely through bitter night skies. Reacher pushed off the flank of the car and waited. The pump truck's headlights hit him, and it slowed, and then its lights flicked up to bright, and then it stopped dead. For a second, Reacher was conscious of his dark pants and khaki hat and tan coat. The coat was old, but it still looked like highway patrol issue, and the dead Crown Vic was parked crosswise, as if to block access to the runway. And no one uses plain Crown Vicks except law enforcement. But the Rapid City guys must have been told that a bent cop would be waiting there to meet them, because after just a brief pause, the pump truck moved on again, with the de-icer close behind. Reacher raised his hand, partly like a greeting, partly like a traffic stop, and a minute later he was sitting in the warmth inside the pump truck's cab, riding up the runway toward whatever was waiting for him at the other end. 3:27 in the morning, 28 minutes to go. Chapter 43. The Boeing had taxied and turned and was parked as near as it could get to the first line of huts. Up close it looked gigantic, a huge plane, high and wide and long, at temporary rest in the middle of nowhere, towering over the silent buildings behind it, hissing and whistling, an active, living presence in a passive, frozen landscape. Its engines were still spooling noisily, and its belly light was still flashing red and its forward door was latched wide open. Lights were on inside. An aluminum house painter's ladder had been extended down from the cabin to the runway surface below. It looked thin and puny and insubstantial next to the giant plane. There were 7 men on the ground, or what looked like 6 men and a boy. There was no mistaking Plato, 4 feet and 11 inches tall, but that abstract measurement did not convey the reality. He had a big man's heft and thickness and muscularity, and a big man's stiffness and posture and movement, but a small child's stature. He was not dwarfish. He was not a freak. His limbs and his torso and his neck and his head were all reasonably well proportioned. He was like an NFL linebacker, reduced in size by exactly 25%. That was all. He was a miniature tough guy, like a toy.